Live on Giants. And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Lance Medow with you, riding solo today, but we will get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to a number of different topics over the course of the program. Pat Shurmur named the 18th head coach in franchise history earlier this week. We've had a number of guests on the last few days. We'll get more of your feedback on that news. But I think I want to start today, before we get to some of the calls and the tweets, Dave Gettleman spoke at the Senior Bowl yesterday, an informal conversation that he had with reporters, and he covered a variety of different subjects that we have been talking about on this program over the last few days. So I want to read some quotes, we'll get your feedback, and we'll analyze what he had to say. Topic number one had to do with Eli Manning and whether or not he is going to be the starting quarterback and whether or not he is going to be the quarterback that they're going to be leaning on moving forward. So if you remember, at Dave Gettleman's introductory presser, he said that he was impressed with what Eli Manning did against the Philadelphia Eagles at home late in the season. And he said, listen, as long as it's not a mirage and there's upside and he was able to produce at a high level in other games, then there's no reason why they should be able to move on. So this is what Dave Gettleman said about Eli Manning and the conversation that he had with him. Quote, I had an opportunity to watch Manning's film because the quarterback is the most important position on the team. At the end of the day, it wasn't a mirage, referring to that Eagles game. It was not a mirage, end quote. So that's what he said with respect to Eli Manning. He also said that he had an opportunity to speak with him, and it was good to sit down in an informal situation for the first time in nearly over a decade because he had been away from the team. Not necessarily a decade with the Panthers, but just hadn't necessarily been around the team from a day-to-day operation standpoint. Topic number two had to do with Davis Webb. Now, one of the things that we had discussed on this program was whether or not Dave Gettleman had an opportunity to interact with Davis Webb, what he thought of him when Davis Webb came out of the draft. Now, the other thing that you can't dismiss here is the fact that Dave Gettleman is not going to reveal everything about Davis Webb in a press conference or in a chat with reporters. Because number one, you don't want to give away how you feel about all the quarterbacks on your roster, knowing that you have the number two overall pick and you don't want to give an inkling to other teams what direction you may go in terms of what position you're favoring in. So you have to take a step back when you read this quote and analyze this quote. This doesn't mean that there's no substance behind the words, but no GM in the National Football League in professional sports is going to lay out exactly how they feel about a player on their roster because they don't want to bring the trade value down. They don't want to impact the trade value, and they also don't want to give any feedback to teams about where they may be thinking about going with the number two overall pick. So when he was asked about Davis Webb, this is what Dave Gettleman had to say in terms of the outlook of the player and overall what he thought of the player. He said, quote, the Giants drafted quarterback Davis Webb last April, but the third round choice never saw the field as a rookie. Quote, I know nothing about him. I know that he's a double transfer. I've spent some time talking to him. He seems like a great kid. I know he followed Eli around and is learning how to be a pro. That's what I know, end quote. Now, what he referred to when he said double transfer was the fact that Davis Webb was at two different schools during the course of his collegiate career, and that he started out at Texas Tech. He was there with Patrick Mahomes, and then obviously he went to Cal. So that's what he meant when he said a double transfer. But he has not had an opportunity to look over a great deal of film for Davis Webb, and he knows that obviously he spent a lot of time with Eli Manning. And we talked about this earlier in the week, actually, when I was on with Paul Dottino about the fact that Frank Segnitti Jr., the quarterback's coach for the Giants, had spent a lot of time evaluating Davis Webb, running simulated games before regular season contests. So certainly put a lot of work in the film room, out on the field. All of that, though, was in practice situations, in scout team situations. No evidence in regular season games. So it's a limited sample size. Anybody who says they know this and that about Davis Webb is simply speculating and throwing out their own two cents about what they think he may pan out to be. But Dave Gettleman gave no indication in these comments about whether or not Webb is definitely going to be a successor, what he thinks of Webb, and based on what he thinks of Webb, where they may go with the number two overall pick. So, I mean, if anybody wants to run with this quote and say, oh, this is an indication that clearly the Giants are going to draft a quarterback, completely disagree. I don't think he gave any inkling on that front of where he may go with the number two overall pick. And that brings me to the next quote when he was specifically asked about where they may be leaning with the number two overall pick. And this is a similar philosophy that we have heard with previous general managers when it comes to where the Giants' philosophy runs when it comes to the draft overall, which is best player available. And that is nothing new, no matter who the general manager of this team has been. Quote, with the second pick, we're going to take the best player. They screamed at me in Carolina, you've got to draft a tackle, you've got to draft a tackle. If the value's not there, when you pick, you're going to make a mistake. You'll make a mistake. We're going to set ourselves up so that we can take the best player available, and if the best player available is a quarterback, then that's what we're going to do. End quote. He was referring to when he was in Carolina, there was a lot of chatter about the Panthers needed to invest in young offensive linemen. And in fairness, Dave Gettleman has drafted a number of offensive linemen when he was in Carolina. He just didn't take anybody in the first round. He took offensive linemen in the middle rounds, and two of them in particular have panned out, whether it be at the guard position or it be at the tackle position. So it's not as if he was overlooking the offensive line. It's just he didn't necessarily use a first-round pick on that selection. But he emphasized best player available. And also said if the quarterback turns out to be the best player available, they're not necessarily going to shy away from that. And I'll refer back to something he said in his opening press conference where he said you can never have enough, and I'm paraphrasing, at any position in the National Football League. So you look at the Giants roster right now, Geno Smith's a free agent, but they have Eli Manning, you have Davis Webb under contract. That doesn't mean that necessarily they would shy away from taking a quarterback to have three quarterbacks on the roster. That goes back to the competition angle. So you can read into that as much as you wish in terms of what Dave Gettleman had to say about the number two overall pick. Last point I want to get to is he did say that he spoke with Odell Beckham. And this is what he had to say. Quote, had a chat with Odell, had a great chat with him. People are going to call me crazy, but in that 2014 draft, the only guy I would have taken over Kelvin Benjamin, who the Panthers took, the only guy I would have taken over him was Odell. That's it. The bottom line is he's a wonderful, talented player, and I'm looking forward to working with him. End quote. So, spoke with Odell Beckham, spoke with Eli Manning, gave his observations and his takeaways from those brief conversations. He addressed philosophy going in, where they're thinking about the number two overall pick, and then I'm sure probably the most important takeaway from what he had to say was his thoughts on Davis Webb, which once again is limited because he's not going to tell the world what he thinks of a prospect on the roster so that teams can start to say to themselves, boy, Dave Gettleman's very high on Davis Webb. Maybe that means they're not going to use the pick on a quarterback. So now, if you're Cleveland at number one, you could change your philosophy. Or if you're Indianapolis at number three. No GM, like I said, is going to do that. And I understand people are going to run away with this quote, and it's an indication of, well, you know, that's not necessarily a ringing endorsement. He was being upfront and simply said that he has not necessarily had a great deal of time with Davis Webb to run away with indications of where he thinks he's going to go as a quarterback. He also said that starting Monday, after the press conference introduced Pat Shurmur, his priority, now that the Senior Bowl would have passed, is going to be to start to sit down and evaluate the personnel on the roster, meaning the guys that played last season, the guys that are set to be free agents. A lot of the initial legwork was about evaluating the prospects in the draft because you had the Senior Bowl come up very quickly since he was introduced as general manager. Next few weeks, priority number one, and he indicated this when he spoke to the reporters, is sit down, watch as much film as he could watch, he said, till his eyes bleed out, with respect to who they want to retain on this roster, who they want to move on from, and assessing the free agent market and who they want to bring in. And remember, a big part of that is also getting Pat Shurmur's feedback on where he wants to go with the roster so that Dave Gettleman can get an indication of what Pat thinks about the roster. And then the other part of this is, and any GM will do this, getting, as they round out the coaching staff, what the coaching staff thinks about positional players in their respective categories and also what the coaching staff thinks of, in the draft, the positional players that would fit into their room. So you always want to lean on the coaching staff, whether it be your head man, whether it be your assistants, to determine where they think of this prospect class and what they think of the free agent class. Because remember, the coaching staff, these are going to be the individuals that are going to be working with the roster and the players on a day-to-day basis, much more so in terms of the interaction from a general manager standpoint or even a front office standpoint. So those opinions are weighed heavily by members of the front office to know what direction they want to take the team. So those are some of the biggest takeaways from what Dave Gettleman had to say when he spoke with the media. And this was the first time that we heard from Dave Gettleman since he was formally introduced as the general manager. And Dave Gettleman will, I'm sure, address the media in a more formal setting before the draft take place, and then obviously during the course of the draft. But it was just interesting to hear him follow up on Eli Manning, Odell Beckham, Davis Webb, as well as the outlook heading in to the draft with the number 2 overall pick. We're going to open up the phone lines, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Try to address a few tweets over the airwaves here today as well. But without further ado, let's open up the phone lines. As we always say, everything is up for debate. Everything is up for conversation. Tony is in D.C. He gets us going on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's happening, Tony?
Hey, Lance. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it. Thanks for making it. So what do you have for us?
Full disclosure, and I said this weeks ago before he was hired, when he was hired, I am in the Gettleman tank. I'm pretty much going to defend whatever he does. But at the same time, he is, in my opinion, making all the right moves. To simply put it with the Pat Shurmur hire, remember how we talked about how Manning and Roethlisberger and Rivers went to the teams that they really should have gone to when it all panned out? I think that's what it is with Sherman, McDaniels, and Patricia. And the reason why I say that is because Patricia and McDaniels wanted to go to teams with young, developed quarterbacks. That's the rumor. That's the rumor. I'm not saying that's the case, but that's the rumor. Whereas Shurmur is known and proven to develop future franchise, well, future quarterbacks. I won't say franchise.
Well, he's worked with some young quarterbacks. He's worked with Donovan McNabb. He's worked with Sam Bradford. Mm-hmm. He's worked with Nick Foles. And he's worked with all of those players just as they entered the National Football League. He was with the Eagles in 1999 when Donovan McNabb was drafted and then soon took over as the quarterbacks coach, I think about 3 years later in 2002. So he developed McNabb. He developed Bradford because he was with Bradford as a rookie with the Rams. And Nick Foles came into the league in 2012, and his second stint with the Eagles started at 13. So I agree with you there, Tony. I mean, that is certainly a part of the philosophy. I don't think that was the overwhelming, though, thought of bringing in somebody like Pat Shurmur, because you don't know if the Giants are going to draft a quarterback with the number 2 overall pick. So, you know, that's still an unknown. I think the fact that he had previous head coaching experience, unlike some of those other candidates that you mentioned, I think that was a huge leg up for him, knowing that they just went through Ben McAdoo for 2 seasons, who did not have previous head coaching experience. So, you know, that's a big edge that he had on a guy like Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia. Let's also not dismiss, and I'll let you continue, Tony, you know, when you say about, oh, well, guys wound up in ideal fits. I've always said this. The NFL is about relationships when it comes to the general manager and head coaches. Bob Quinn, who's the general manager of the Detroit Lions, was with the New England Patriots for a decade. He knows Matt Patricia. Normally coaches, and I'm not saying that this is true for every situation, because Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur did not necessarily cross paths during their NFL careers, but Quinn and Patricia knew each other very well. It would make sense that in the end, he's ultimately hired as the Lions coach, and McDaniels did not necessarily have a connection with the Colts general manager, but when you think about his relationships and familiarity with the AFC, being with the Patriots for many years, also, like you said, having Andrew Luck there, so maybe he's thinking about stability for at least the near future and the long term, you can understand maybe why he would wind up there as well.
Absolutely. And like you said, those 9 wins with the Browns, you got to put that in perspective. It is hard to get 9 wins with that organization. So like I said, I think it was a great hire. And I wish Paulie was there, because I am a staunch, we need to take Rosner Darnold advocate. But I have to say, with Pat Shurmur, I feel a lot better if you know, they decided to go a different direction and Shurmur worked with Webb. I do feel a lot better that he is the guy to develop him. I'm still on the quarterback camp, and I'll get into why, but I just think where this team is going, it's what's needed. And this is the true debate, you know, point I'm going to bring up. And, you know, for the fans to call in, there is a big schism in the fan base about who to draft, because there is a big difference of opinion about what this team is doing. from looking at what, you know, the owner, Mr. Mara, and the Tisch family is doing down to the GM, this is a quiet rebuild. Now, I know Giants fans and media don't want to use the word rebuild and Giants in the same sentence. I get it. But when you got a new GM, a new vice president, a new head coach, a new defensive coordinator, a new offensive coordinator, all new skill coaches, and no veteran offensive lineman under contract, that's a quiet rebuild. So with that said...
Well, but here's the thing, Tony, I'll let you continue. The reason why I don't love the term rebuild is because in the National Football League, there's more turnover on a roster from year to year, regardless of how good or how bad your team is, because of the fluidity of the cap and the changes that happened every offseason, much more so than you're going to see with Major League Baseball, the NBA, and so forth. So every team, you can argue, Tony, changes from year to year. I don't think the Giants are in any different of a ballpark just because they finished with their record in 2017. The roster was going to change, I mean, even if they won 11 games again, which it did, even if you look at the 16-17 roster. So, you know, when you throw out rebuild, you have free agents every year. You have a new draft class that comes in. There's going to have to be decisions that are going to be made that are going to lead to changes on the roster. So, you know, when everybody throws out rebuild, you could say every team is rebuilding every single offseason. There's no difference.
Yeah, but you're talking about the roster. I'm talking about the front office and coaching staff.
It's but I don't look at that. But that to me, is not a rebuild, Tony. When you change the general manager, you change the coaching staff. I mean, that's just heading in a different direction from a philosophy standpoint and infusing new ideas into your team. I mean, if you're really talking about rebuilding, I mean, that to me has more to do with your roster than it has to do with the decisions or the changes you make to your front office.
And I do agree. That's why I use the term more quiet rebuild versus rebuild. But you know, and I know that's a very controversial word, and I get that. But it does look like he is more from these hires. It looks to me to be a future focused team. You know, as far as you know, the type of people we're bringing in from the defensive coordinator to the head coach, it does to me look a bit more future focused, which really makes this second pick more interesting. Now, no one knows what's going to happen, what he is going to do. And of course, like you said, he's not going to, you know, show his hand in verbal comments. But by looking at the hires and, I mean, the moves he is making with the coaching staff, it looks to me like this that we're really going to show what we're about in 2019, not 2018. Now, I'm not saying we're not going to be competitive in 2018. That's not what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, Tony, personally, I think you're reading into the things a real big way. I mean, I don't think, you know, based on the rumors of how the coaching staff looks, is any indication that the team is thinking more about 2019 and 20 versus 2018. You know, guys got to coach the players that are on the roster at the end of the day. You develop who's here. Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily worried about who's going to be in the roster 2 to 3 years down the road. And as we mentioned, and appreciate the phone call, Tony, thanks so much for weighing in. You know, Pat Shurmur has had experience working with a variety of different quarterbacks. So whether or not it's a quarterback that's taken with the number 2 overall pick, it's Davis Webb, it's Eli Manning, he's going to work with who he has. When you look at what he did with the Minnesota Vikings, you know, it's not as if Mike Zimmer and Ziggy Wolf, their owner, and Spielman, their general manager, walked up to Pat Shurmur and said, "So Pat, who do you want to be the quarterback?" And then, you know, he was able to pick out who he wanted. They decided that they wanted to bring in Case Keenum. They already had Sam Bradford on the roster, and they had Teddy Bridgewater. 2 of the 3 were banged up. His choice was that he had to work with Case Keenum. He made changes to the scheme and the system around Case Keenum, and it worked out well, and the Vikings were one of the best teams in the NFC. So, once again, as a coach, philosophy is always you work with who's on your roster, you develop them, and you think about the now. No coach is going to tell you that while he's focusing on the 2018 season, he's worried about how the roster and how the player is going to develop 2 years down the road. So, once again, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I just don't think that any of these rumors that you're seeing online with respect to potential hirings or bringing in Pat Shurmur, who's had experience working with younger quarterbacks, is now steering the philosophy more towards the long-term future rather than focusing simply on getting this team back on track for 2018. And remember, when John Mara spoke to the media following Dave Gettleman's press conference, one of the questions that he was asked about is, what are your feelings and your outlook and goals and expectations for the 2018 team? And his answer was, I expect the 2018 team to be competitive. So that means that they plan on winning, competing, and being in a position to thrive in 2018. 2018 is not a throwaway year where you're like, well, let's experiment and work out the kinks so that we're all ready to go in 2019. And that goes back to my main premise when it comes to the National Football League. And let's use the Vikings for an example, okay? Minnesota in 2016 was a team that finished 8-8. They finished 13-3 a year later. So this is a team that was 500 and made some changes in free agency, addressed the offensive line, had some issues at quarterback with injuries, lost Dalvin Cook. Despite all of that, still managed to turn things around in 2017 and get into the playoffs. And oh, by the way, probably what's most notable about the Minnesota Vikings, if you want to take it a step further with respect to the turnaround, is how quickly the offense switched gears from 2016 to 2017. I was doing some recent research on this to make my point even clearer. Vikings in 2016, they ranked 28th in the NFL in total offense, 23rd in scoring, dead last in rushing, and 18th in passing. 2017, 1 year later we're talking about, the Vikings went from, in total offense, 28th to 11th. They went in scoring offense, 23rd to 10th. In rushing, they went from dead last to 7th, and in passing, they went from 18th to 11th. Those are noticeable jumps in all four of those respective categories. Now, I'm not bringing this up to say that it's automatically going to happen with the New York Giants. That's not my point. My point is that quick turnarounds can happen within the span of 1 year in the National Football League. That is not unheard of. It requires free agency, the draft, and coaching to all click. And, of course, the overall team execution. So there's a lot of factors that are at play. But what I constantly hear is that, oh, it's impossible, you know, when you look at a roster, no way that things could be turned around quickly. I'd say that's 100% false because there's been ample evidence. And I'm focusing on the Vikings right now because of the Pat Shurmur connection, because that's relevant. But if you do a study in the National Football League, 8 of the 12 teams that made the playoffs this year did not make the playoffs in 2016. That's one indication of how quickly the turnaround goes. But let's go further. Let's peel the onion back a few more layers. The four teams that won their division in the NFC this year all finished third or fourth in their respective divisions last year. Once again, that's a noticeable trend. Is it happening every single year or 8 new teams making the playoffs? No. But on average, 4 new teams are making the playoffs, on average, out of the 12. I'm not just talking about the NFC. I'm talking about the entire playoff field. So there's a lot of turnaround in the National Football League. It can happen. It's just a matter of addressing the areas that held you back the previous year. We're going to have to wait and see what happens in free agency first, which is going to dictate an awful lot about what is going to transpire in the draft and the thinking. And part of the reason is, and we'll get back to your phone call here in a second, one of the things that I did not mention off the top that Dave Gettleman hinted at, the reason why his philosophy and the Giants' philosophy is best player available, or you want to be put in a position where you could take the best player available, is that's why free agency is so important. Because if you take care of business in free agency, then that doesn't handcuff you heading into the draft, putting you in a position where all of a sudden you're forced to fill a need. If you do justice for your team in free agency, you then don't put yourself against the wall and saying, boy, you know, we missed out on all of our targets in free agency. The market didn't pan out the way we wanted. Somebody had a setback in OTAs. The only way that we could address this position is through the draft. Now, all of a sudden, what you do is now you're reaching. You're reaching to fill a need under those circumstances. That's why you want to see what happens in free agency, because if you address some depth, nobody's saying you got to go out and make a big splash, but if you address depth, which is another area that the Giants want to hammer out in free agency, because you see what happens with the Eagles. They lost players, impactful players at every level, did not miss a beat, need depth. You don't just have to worry about the top 22 on your team. If you do right in free agency, then it gives you much more flexibility in the draft to say, hey, you know what? We don't necessarily need to go into the number 2 overall pick saying we have to address this position. Now we could take the most explosive player, the most impactful player at any position, and just add another dynamic individual to the roster. Any team, in the NFL always wants to be put in that spot. Most of them are not when they have setbacks with the injury bug that takes place between free agency and the draft, or they missed out on all of their targets during free agency. So let's see how free agency pans out before everybody starts to pencil in and solidify what the Giants should do with the number two overall spot. Let's head back to the lines. Christian is in New York. Christian, welcome to the program. What do you got for us?
Hey, Lance. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Christian.
I was going to talk about the offense, but something that I've been thinking about lately is the combo of Pierre-Paul and Vernon. It just you have a lot of money for the two of those guys for the kind of production they're getting right now. And I mean, the sack totals are not a big issue, but the way that teams would run at the edges against us this year and do it so effectively, and you know, they just seem to not be setting the edge at all this year. And, I mean, maybe the linebackers aren't helping them, but it just seems like one of the two has to go or maybe take a pay cut, in my opinion.
Well, listen, that depends on what Dave Gettleman thinks of those two players. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they have met expectations over the last two seasons. I think JPP, who's been on the record saying that, you know, he can improve and he could do better. So, I mean, your point is well taken, Christian. I think you have to take into consideration the two of them have been fairly banged up since they've been put together. I mean, I can't remember a season since the two of them have been, you know, on the roster, ready to go at the start of the season, that you got a full 16 games with the two of them on the field. Now, maybe that's unrealistic, Christian, because of how fast players and how quickly players get hurt. But, you know, Vernon with the wrist injury, and then, you know, this year he was sidelined for a bulk of games. JPP obviously has been banged up. I'm talking post-hand injury. You know, it's hard to get guys to produce at a consistent level, Christian, when they're not on the field together at the same time, and all of a sudden the coaching staff has to mix and match. So, you know, that's a big reason, I think, and that's probably the overwhelming reason why you have not seen the sack numbers that you expected, and maybe you're not seeing the quarterback hits in the hurries as consistently as you would like to see. Now, if you're a front office executive, do you take that into consideration and you say, well, you know, the reason why the numbers are not where they are is because the guys have been hurt? Or do you say, well, can I rely on a player moving forward if there's been a track record of him being banged up? That's something that Dave Gettleman has to decide moving forward. But keep in mind, Christian, it's not so easy where you just say, hey, you know what, we're going to cut these guys because they're making too much money. There's cap hits, there's dead money types of things that you have to take into consideration, and then that hurts you in other departments that you want to improve. So you've got to weigh all of those pros and cons before you simply make a knee-jerk type of reaction.
And another thing I was thinking about, and this is assuming that you want to take a quarterback with a number two pick, what do you think you could get if you package Davis Webb and Pierre-Paul for a draft pick? Because I feel like having Eli, a number two quarterback, number two pick there, and Davis Webb all on the same roster just might not even work out so well.
Well, why is that, though? Why would you be skeptical of having Eli Manning, Davis Webb, and a young quarterback?
I just feel like it could grow sour, even if everyone's trying their best to be a good sport. Because
sour how? Here's the thing. Eli Manning is at the tail end of his career, and I think based on what transpired this season, he understands that whether it's the old regime or the new regime in terms of management, the Giants have to start thinking about his successor. So if they draft a quarterback, I don't think it would be a rude awakening for Eli Manning. Davis Webb, who's been in the NFL for one season and should understand, based on what transpired in college, remember, I mean, part of the reason he transferred is because of the emergence of Patrick Holmes, Christian. So he's been in that position where you always have to think about the team may bring in more competition. And competition is not necessarily a bad thing. So, I mean, I get your concern, but anybody that's been playing football, forget professional football, anybody that's been in competitive football for the majority of their life has to know that how the roster looks one year is not guaranteed the next year. And I don't think that should be a reason why the Giants should shy away from drafting a young quarterback.
Well, no, I would love to have all three of them as a quarterback group. That'd be fantastic, and it would feel safe for the future. But I could just see Davis Webb being sick of being in that situation his whole life and maybe wanting out of New York if if they go number two, because they're going to give that guy every chance to win the job.
No, I'm sure they will. Well, but winning that job probably beyond 2018, though, not necessarily in the immediacy. So in the immediacy, and appreciate the phone call, Christian, it would be more about development and pushing a guy like Davis Webb and Davis Webb pushing the rookie under those circumstances. I mean, that's how the depth chart would look. Eli's your starter, which Dave Gettleman clearly has indicated based on his comments yesterday. And then you're focusing on now developing perhaps two guys behind Eli Manning and having those two guys push one another and let the best man win. I mean, it's not rare for a team to have a few options behind the starter and seeing who is going to develop over the span of 2 or 3 years. I don't think that's necessarily going to sour the situation. And here's the other situation, or the other circumstance, I should say, that you have to realize. From the game of leverage, you said Davis Webb could be sour. Where is the leverage for a player like Davis Webb in that situation to then demand a trade or be unhappy? I mean, he'd only be entering the second year of his NFL career. There wouldn't necessarily be any indication that there's no shot for him to be the starter. I just don't see how he would all of a sudden become sour because they may want to bring in competition at that spot. And, you know, this is the other thing to take into consideration. He was drafted by Jerry Reese, and Dave Gettleman made this clear when he spoke to the media. Dave Gettleman only knows that Davis Webb was drafted by the Giants. He has no established relationship with him. His knowledge of him is limited. So when you evaluate all of that, once again, Davis Webb, I think, realizes when a new GM comes in and a new coach comes in, you've got to now reprove yourself. I mean, Eli Manning is now having to study up on Vikings offensive tendencies just to become familiar with Pat Shurmur and his offensive philosophies before they even get down and dirty in the study room, in the film room. Everybody, I think, has been put on notice when there's changes to the coaching staff and there's changes in management. That means that anything that was promised to you, anything that was discussed, has to be thrown out the window because the direction that the team will go in with Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman is not necessarily the same as where it was with Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese. And I think if you ask most players, they understand that. David is in Connecticut. David, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well, Dave. What do you got for us?
I'm doing all right. Listen, I was just reading an article, I think it was on Big Blue View, how the Giants last year were significantly the worst special teams team last year. By like a significant margin for certain statistics from extra point, field position, and punt. So I think just a few hours ago or yesterday, we got a new special teams coach. Isn't that correct?
Well, the Giants have not officially announced anything with respect to the coaching staff. Pat Shurmur is the only official announcement. He's going to be introduced on Friday. And when Ben McAdoo was hired as the head coach, the Giants then, from what I recall, waited. They had a press release and they announced the entire coaching staff. But anything you're reading about, anything you're hearing about, and I'm not saying that I haven't seen it myself, but nothing has been officially announced with respect to the Giants saying that X amount of people and these individuals have been hired. Yeah.
On 24/7 Sports, it says Thomas McGaughey is officially the third.
Well, I could tell you if you go to Giants.com, there is absolutely no press release, David, whatsoever. No email that has been sent out. The Giants have not confirmed anybody that is on Pat Shurmur's staff. So once again, anything you're reading that says officially is according to a source or according to a report. I'm not denying it nor confirming it. That's not what I'm here to do. I'm just telling you from the team standpoint, nothing is official at all.
That's fine. I understand. Yeah. You know, as a reader, you see official. You think it's pretty
well,
official.
Giants.com is the official source. Giants.com is the official source. And I can tell you, Dave, I've read reports.
I understand the rest of the...
Dave.
Well,
hold on, Dave.
So you're telling me even the Dave defense, he hasn't officially been named?
Dave, nobody has been officially named. As I said, if you're not seeing anything on Giants.com, it's not official. You can have Joe Schmo send out a tweet and tell you that the Giants have officially hired Joe Schmo as the special teams coach, and I'm telling you, they can word it any way they want. Nothing at all is official.
Okay.
Period.
All right, that's fair. So then just a little follow-up.
Real quick, what do you got?
So obviously we're filling out the rest of the, you know, coaching staff. And I was just curious if there are any former players that might get involved with the coaching situation. I know, like, Antonio Brown was brought in as, like, an interim basis.
But you're talking about Antonio Pierce.
I was just wondering if there's anybody that you've heard of or think that would be good that might be coming in to help the team either on a partial basis or a permanent basis.
Well, there's a possibility, and appreciate the phone call, David. Antonio Pierce, by the way, was the player that you were referring to. Antonio Brown is currently suiting up for the Steelers. I don't think he's interested in coaching the New York Giants. And it's not – I mean, I don't think that it would be unreal if somebody who was a former player was brought in as a consultant during training camp or something like that. I have not personally heard about anything. But once again, I think that there's been a track record in place where the Giants have turned to a few former players to at least work with individuals or at least help out positional coaches. I would not be surprised if that happens perhaps sometime for a small period of time during the course of training camp. But as far as the coaching staff is concerned, we'll have to wait and see when the Giants make an official announcement if there's anybody that is a former player that has been tied in with the Giants. But if you're talking about training camp, I mean, just based on my own opinion, it would not surprise me if a former player came in to assist. Antonio Pierce is a good one that you could point to. I mean, David Tyree, who's a member of the organization, he's another person that has been heavily involved in the team. The Giants have leaned on the history and the tradition of this franchise. I don't think that that's a stretch to say that somebody during camp could very well come in. Scott is in New Mexico. Scott, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how are you?
I'm doing well, Scott. How's things with you?
Good. I think you made a number of very salient points this morning listening to you, so I was happy to – I was a little disturbed when I read the Gettleman article, and I think you brought a little bit of clarity to it.
So, well, I appreciate you listening. I mean, listen, if you want to hammer out anything, I'm more than happy to further discuss. I mean, I'm just curious why you would have been so upset in terms of reading Gettleman's comments.
Well, I was a former general manager of a corporation. And the first things you want to do when you get into a new corporation, especially if you're building an organization, is you want to start evaluating personnel right away. The fact that he had made the comment about not knowing anything about Davis Webb was kind of disturbing to me. Also, he had made some comments, I think, in the article that says that Pat Shurmur's, I think the quote was, he's a real man you can talk to. I, you know, when I hear hyperboles like that, I'm a little, you know, disheartened because I think he should know his personnel and start doing evaluations right away in regards to personnel. And he said he hadn't even reviewed personnel at all. And I know the Senior Bowl is there, and I know he's there, and I assume he's doing work there. But those are the kinds of things that made me a little uneasy.
Well, and I understand that. I mean, I did read that quote, and I don't think you're misinterpreting it. But you have to understand, at the end of the day, we're looking at free agency is not going to start till March. So
right.
He very well has about a good month and a half to sit down, evaluate the roster. And as I mentioned, a big part of evaluating the roster is also gaining feedback, as I mentioned, Scott, from your coaching staff. And
right.
The coaching staff has yet to be in the building. The head coach has yet to be in the building. They've all
right.
been in Alabama at the Senior Bowl. So, you know, that's part of the dialogue. That's part of the back and forth, meeting with, you know, the pro personnel people who are the ones that are scouting free agency. So, I mean, there's more than enough time. I can understand that maybe it doesn't come off as a warm, fuzzy quotation that, you know, he's been spending 24 hours a day focusing on the roster. But from a timeline perspective, the minute you're hired, there's a lot of things to do in terms of structurally organizing the direction of the team, the front office, making changes. Then all of a sudden the Senior Bowl comes around. Remember, they've had coaching interviews for the last few weeks, focusing on where they want to go there. It's understandable now you go to work once the Senior Bowl is over. So I wouldn't worry about that. And by the way, Scott, I'll let you continue, but one other thing I wanted to add that I should have actually mentioned off the top that I overlooked, Dave Gettleman indicated that Pat Shurmur is going to call plays too. And I'm
right.
sure a number of you are interested in hearing that.
In fact, that was a point also I wanted to ask you about. I have one question that I think I'd like to get your opinion on. But on that particular subject, that was contrary to, and I think it was addressed by a caller yesterday, that they wanted to have a COO type of format for the Giants this year, which I think makes perfect sense because there are a myriad number of problems with the Giants, both offensively and defensively. And I think having Pat Shurmur make the calls is going to double his sort of workload. And I don't think – I know you mentioned like McCarthy and Reed have done
this. I did, yeah.
But they're seasoned coaches, head coaches. And the only stint that Pat Shurmur had – I know there's extenuating circumstances, but his record was 9-23, and so I think to make his job a little bit easier, wouldn't it make sense to bring in sort of a pedigree offensive coordinator, say maybe like a Charlie Weiss or somebody like that, and have them call the play?
And I would not dismiss that. I mean, just because Gettleman indicated that he thinks that Pat Shurmur will call the plays, and I think you bring up valid points. I did raise, and you were correct, I said Mike McCarthy and Andy Reid are two examples of that COO type who have balanced both. And then over the course of their careers, they've also handed those responsibilities off. Now, to your point, Scott, when Shurmur was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, he was there for 2 years. In 11, he was the head coach / OC. In 12, upon reflection, he decided to bring in an offensive coordinator who he spoke with earlier the week, Brad Childress. Now, when I asked Brad Childress, what's the challenges of being a head coach and an OC? Because he was the head coach of the Vikings. He had also been an offensive coordinator. One of the things he raised, now this was Brad Childress's opinion, was what Ben McAdoo tried to do initially, which is balance both roles, and sometimes you're so occupied with the offensive play calling you may overlook other facets and ins and outs and dynamics of what transpires during a game. And that's what you're hitting on. And I'm one that subscribes to the philosophy of Tom Coughlin. Coughlin designated responsibility, so this way he could solely focus on the game, and then he gave input to his respective coaches. Hey, it worked for Tom. But who's to say, Scott? And I have an opportunity to speak with Pat Shurmur, and you're right. We only have basically 1 year where he did both jobs simultaneously. Who's to say that Pat Shurmur can't handle both responsibilities and run a game? Remember, every individual is different. Some can multitask. Others are not good at that. So until we see it, it's hard to say that absolutely that should not be a game plan that could be followed. I think Andy Reid and Mike McCarthy are examples of two guys that can do it.
However, there's so many issues, myriad numbers of issues on the defensive side as well as the offensive side with the Giants. And in order to improve, I think you need the coach's full attention on the defensive side. If his concentration is really on offense because he's calling plays and doesn't realize what's happening on the defensive side, unless you get a very strong defensive coordinator that can sort of offset that, the Giants are sort of doomed to repeat the mistakes they made last year. I mean, when Ben McAdoo came in, he's basically the same kind of situation where he was an offensive coordinator accepting the head coaching role, took over the duties as the play caller. That didn't work out. And Mike Sullivan surprisingly did a very good job when he was given that assignment.
Well, but the difference I'll say, Scott, is you're right about Ben McAdoo. Ben McAdoo, first, he went from a positional coach that had never called plays before to a first-time OC under Tom Coughlin, and then all of a sudden jumped to become a head coach, and he had never been a head coach. Shurmur, while, once again, small sample size, and I understand you raised that, you have somebody, though, that has been in that situation before. He's done both of those roles simultaneously. He's also been in a season where he's just done one of the roles. So it's a little bit different than Ben McAdoo, even though it's a small sample size, Scott, because he does have firsthand experience there.
Right.
So I think there's some stock behind that compared to if it was somebody else like a Ben McAdoo who had only been an OC and never been a head coach, then I think your point is well taken. The fact that he has been both at least lead you to believe that you hope he learned from those experiences and can make adjustments.
Well, I have one question. It's going to sound a little crazy. Do you happen to know when Odell Beckham's contract is his rookie contract is up and when he will be asking for the kind of money that everyone's worried about?
Well, Beckham was drafted in 2014 as a first-round pick. You get a four-year deal plus a fifth-year team option, which the Giants picked up. So
here's my point, and I wanted to know your opinion, and I'll take it off the air. But the Giants Giants need to accumulate draft picks. The only marketable player that the Giants have to trade is probably Odell Beckham. I know I'm probably going to piss off a lot of Giant fans, but I've been a Giant fan for 50 years, so I'm looking at the long picture. They know they're going to have a headache with Odell in regards to salary. Is it possible in this year's draft, and because Cleveland needs a wide receiver, could Odell Beckham be traded to the Cleveland Browns and the Giants would receive their first-round draft choice as well as, say, a draft choice, their first-round draft choice in the second round? And that would give the Giants four draft picks in basically the first 34 picks.
I understand your points, Guy, and somebody else raised this too, and appreciate the phone call. But this was my response with respect to the hypothetical. And I'll answer it just for pure fun, and I know fans love to set up hypotheticals. If you're the Cleveland Browns, you have Corey Coleman on your roster, you have Josh Gordon on your roster, okay? You need a quarterback, and you're looking to obviously beef up the depth chart. I just don't think wide receiver is priority number one for them. Why would they part ways with draft picks that they've accumulated, which is exactly what you're arguing the Giants should do, simply now to give that up to grab a third wide receiver when they already have two dynamic wide receivers on the roster? I just don't think realistically it fills a need for them. And they have a 1-4 overall. They know they can address two positions and get two perhaps home run players without making any moves. They could turn around. If you're Cleveland, you could grab Saquon Barkley with the number one overall pick. And then you could say, at number four, we'll get our quarterback. Especially if they're high on Darnold, Rosen, Mayfield, Allen. They're going to get one of those four guys at the fourth overall pick. If you're Cleveland, why would you part ways with any of those two picks knowing you get Barkley and a quarterback? To me, I think it's a no-brainer for Cleveland to hold on to both of those picks. I don't see why they'd want to part ways with them. Let's head back to the line. Sean's in California. Sean, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, Lance? Long time no talk.
Long time no talk indeed. How are things doing? Sean, what do you got for us?
It's been going good. I didn't call in because I didn't have nothing good to say about the last season. That's why I've been so absent. I mean, like, I don't want to bring up the past, but that Eli Manning benching really pissed me off. But moving on to the future, goodbye to McAdoo. Thank you, Jerry Reese, for doing what you did for the organization. But with Pat Shermer, I kind of like the hire. I mean, like, he's known to take a bad offensive lines, right, and kind of he doesn't need really outstanding players. He can take a mediocre player and teach them the right foundations. And I think we're good with Pat Shermer. I know it's not confirmed yet, but I'm just
well,
I'm
no,
just
Shermer's confirmed.
Like it was confirmed.
Sean, yeah, Shermer is confirmed.
Anyway, no, I was going to say, James Butcher, I mean, like, the guy's a beast. What he did in Arizona, when he came into Arizona, and you look at, I was watching some YouTube videos last night. No, nothing, like, too advanced. But, like, I was just watching Arizona back in, like, the seasons before Butcher came, and then what he did to that defense is just amazing. And if he is officially hired, I mean, like, you're looking at, like, I've been a Giants fan since I was 14. I'm 25 years old now. And this is my first time in the history of being a Giants fan, and I'm actually seeing this whole new change. And this is the next chapter of my life is with the next chapter of Giants coaches and GM Dave Zimmerman. But my point I'm trying to make is, you know, you're looking at the draft, and there's a lot of great quarterbacks, but I'm only looking at one, and I think Rosen is the only one I would take in the first round. I mean, like, You look at the draft. It's quarterback heavy. It's offensive line heavy. Pat Shermer is known to build offensive lines, and he's known to develop quarterbacks. Cause you look at the quarterbacks he has. I mean, like, I'm not dissing anybody. Luke Foles in the Super Bowl, but all I'm trying to say is he finally has Eli Manning. Yo, he adopted OBJ. Like he came from. I'm not saying OBJ is a better player than Diggs because Diggs can play, but it's kind of an upgrade. He went from Diggs to OBJ. Now you went from Case Keenum to Eli Manning. You look at the draft, I mean, like, I hope
he's got a lot of talent. There's no doubt, Sean, that he has a lot of talent that he'll be able to work with.
I just pray the Browns take a quarterback, because if we get Barkley, I know you don't want to take a – I know it's not good to take a running back, but, man, I'm watching that. That guy is a game changer. I'm a UFC fan, and what he did to USC in the Rose Bowl. Oh my God! Like that, when he made like eight people miss. Like,
well,
he is
a great player, but it's also important to note, you know, if you look at what Pat Shurmur has worked with over the course of his career, specifically with the Vikings, you know, he had Dalvin Cook as his starting running back. He lost him, so then he was left with Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon, and the Vikings still finished with a top 10 rushing unit in the NFL this season. So, you know, as a coach, you want to be able to say, no matter who your back is, you've got the offensive line in play, you've got stability at quarterback, and you can have a functional running game no matter who's back there. So that, I think, is a positive in terms of what he was able to do with the Minnesota Vikings. You don't want to have to say, well, you know, we don't have our house in order in terms of the line, and we're going to expect our running back to be our savior. That works sometimes. It doesn't necessarily work all the time.
To wrap it up, I'm so happy for next season. I know you don't see it very often, but I think, you know, we have talent. It's just, you know, I'm not trying to blame one specific person, because it's a lot of people's. It's a team. It's a team sport, right? And just last year wasn't our year, and hopefully, I mean, we have the right people in. I mean, like, I like Dave Gettleman. I watched his interview again last night, and I can't wait to tomorrow for we can learn more about Pat Shurmur. But I'm just so happy for the next season, and I'm getting ready to watch the Senior Bowl on Saturday, and you guys have a good day.
All right, Sean, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. You know, the other thing that I wanted to point out with respect to the play-calling debate about, you know, it's important for the coach to be able to overlook all different facets and shouldn't be all of a sudden worried about just the offense while the defense is out on the field. Look at the Rams this year. Sean McVay, offensive coordinator, became the head coach. And I've used this example a lot of times on this program. I sound like a broken record, but it's relevant to what we're discussing right now. He brought in Wade Phillips as his defensive coordinator. Now, Wade Phillips is a polished coach who has head coaching experience. And what would happen more often than not during Rams games, and this was documented on television, while the defense was out there, Sean McVay would go to the bench, he'd sit down with his offensive coaches and his playmakers, and he would be looking over the next drive and reviewing the plays from the previous drive, while Wade Phillips is essentially the pseudo head coach. So it can be done if you have individuals around you that you trust, that you empower, and that have experience. So that is all going to depend on how Pat Shurmur designates responsibilities and what he thinks of the individuals on his coaching staff and whether or not they can handle additional responsibilities and how he can balance the load himself. On that topic, I do want to try to work in some tweets. I know some days we get very heavy on the phones. I try to read over the tweets even off the air, but let's try to get to a few on the air here, and then we'll get back to your phone calls. At Drew and Ben, much more confident in Shurmur play calling than McAdoo. McAdoo had 2 years of OC experience before becoming the head coach. That's not enough experience to morph your system after defenses figure you out. Shurmur is a much more experienced and effective play caller. And I brought that up earlier. He's a head coach and an offensive coordinator. Ben McAdoo was not. It's a little bit different in terms of the experience factor. So you need to take that into consideration. As more and more tweets come in, we'll try to get to them on the air. In the meantime, let's head back to the lines. Len is in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, Lance, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Len. How's things with you?
Good. Good show today. I just wanted to go on record on the two hires. I'm a big supporter of both of those hires. I haven't had a chance to say that yet since Gettleman got hired and since the word on Shurmur came down.
Well, until you give your seal of approval on
the
show, it's not official.
I think they're both, I mean, geez, you can't argue with any of the credentials. So we just have to hope that, things work out. The one thing we're going to have to get used to, and I am kind of anxious to hear Shurmur, you know, respond to questions tomorrow and hear what his opening comments are, but I think he's going to be fine. And I like the fact that he's, been a head coach. He's on the offensive side, and he's had NFC experience. That, I think you know this from talking to me in the past. That's always been a big thing with me.
Well, Len, what do you always say, Len? You always say, we're not trying to beat the Jacksonville Jaguars every season, right? You know, I'm going to steal
right.
I'm going to steal your line, Len. Though, in all seriousness, now you got it.
Thank
but
you,
Len,
thank you for
Len,
remembering that.
But
and,
Len,
but it's the truth.
Yeah, it is
you
the
know?
Truth.
When
but
we're
Len, you got
to play these guys. We're going to play until we play Jacksonville again 4 years from this
yep.
coming season. We will have played each of these teams about six times. So, we better be ready to beat them. But I think Shurmur is a good choice. I like that NFC experience. it always been important to me. And the one thing we're going to have to get used to, I mean, Gettleman's a different voice. I mean, it's a different voice than Jerry Reese. He's going to respond differently to questions. You know, already you got the call from the fella in New Mexico who's a good caller and, you know, questioning how he sounded and responding to certain questions and so forth. Anyway, we're just going to have to get used to that. But I think we got guys with credentials, and I don't think we could have done much better. You know, the only time, and I'll finish with this, Lance, I know we're getting close to 1 o'clock. The only time I heard Shermer speak, I guess it was 2 years ago, Andy Reid got fired, and they needed an interim coach to finish the season.
Yeah, Chip Kelly got fired. He was the interim head coach.
Yes, and exactly. Shermer was the interim or acting coach for one game.
Yeah.
Okay? And they, you know, they beat the Giants at their MetLife. But after the game, I think it was purely filler time. He was interviewed, and you know, congratulations on winning your game as a, you know, interim head coach and so forth, and you know, you know, we move on to next season and good luck and so forth. And he said, and this stuck with me, Lance. I think this is the kind of guy that Shermer's going to be. His response to the interviewer was, "I've got one more thing to do. I got to get my guys back home."
I remember that quote. I do. Yeah.
And I thought to myself, wow.
You know what, Len? I'll add real quickly. What was interesting was, you know, because a lot of people were like, well, he was in Philadelphia when the Vikings lost, right? Very close to the Giants facility. And what did Pat Shermer do? Went back to Minnesota with his team. Made sure that he had closure with his team, went through the exit interviews, and then moved on to the next task at hand. I'm not bringing that up to, you know, pat people on the back. But I think that says something about the individual.
It says something about the individual. Yeah. Absolutely right. Yeah. I think both those instances are – and that's why I'm so excited about hearing him talk tomorrow. I think he's – you know, I think you keep your fingers crossed and you hope it's going to work out for us because it's time for us to change things around. Hey, Lance, let me ask you a question. The beginning of the show today, you were talking a little bit about turnaround, and I agree with your premise. You know, it's a year-to-year league. You can turn things around, but can you give me a frame of reference of what you think a turnaround would look like, Lance?
Well, what do you mean by that in terms of how the roster looks?
You use the Vikings at 8-8,
yeah,
making it to the NFC Championship game. I mean, you're not talking about a 3-13 team turning it around and going to the NFC Champion. Is that within your thinking, Lance?
I think it's feasible. Is it rare? Yes, it would be rare. I mean, but I'm looking at, if you just want to go back to 2016, which was my point about the fact that I said every NFC divisional champ this year finished third or fourth in their respective division the previous year. So let's just real quickly, if you look, okay, the Vikings were 8-8. Okay, so they went up to 13 wins. Okay, that was not as a significant jump to your point. New Orleans won 7 games in 2016. All right, so that was a team hovering around 500. They made a small jump. The Rams were 4-12. Sean McVay comes in, and all of a sudden, they win the division with double-digit victories. So, like I said, it's rare, but it is feasible. It is feasible. And listen, I'm going to let you go on that point.
Yeah.
I want to squeeze in another call.
Keep up the good work.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Shakes is in Baltimore. Shakes, welcome aboard. What do you got for us?
What's going on, Lance, man? It's rough being a host, ain't it?
It's rough being a host? I feel like I'm comfortable. I don't know. Do you see me shaking and nervous here?
I'm listening to you, man, and it was a caller. He wouldn't let you talk. He kept going. He was rambling. Another caller calls in, and he wants to trade OBJ, and I'm like, what is going on?
As if Shakes, listen, you've listened to this program long enough, as if this is uncharted territory. Come on. We've got our fair share of characters that call in.
Wow,
come
man,
on, you know
defense.
That. It's like right, training right, camp. I've had my fair share of reps.
Question for you as I get off, but first I want to talk to you about something real quick. I want to pick your brain. Now, I know you can't talk about, well, I know it's not official yet, right? But I know you can talk about this guy. This defensive coordinator, James Betcher,
yeah,
from Arizona. Now, it's reports that he's going to be our defensive coordinator, but it's not official to you. So, you know, I know you ain't going to say it's official, but let's talk about this guy. He runs a 3-4 defense. Do you think
Correct.
That we could convert, or do you think we'll be a more hybrid type of defense?
Well, let me say this. James Betcher, who was the defensive coordinator for the Arizona Cardinals and was let go when Bruce Arians no longer continues head coach, he ran a hybrid defense. When you go back and you look at what he did with the Arizona Cardinals, they ran the 3-4 base shakes only about like 26% of the time. So he was in a lot of nickel, especially when you take into consideration all the secondary players that they had, you know, in terms of the safeties and the corners that he mixed and matched. And Chandler Jones, remember, was a defensive end with the Patriots. He moves to a linebacker slash defensive end. So to answer your question in generic terms, which I'd be more than happy to address, and I'm not shying away from your topic, if you look at the Giants personnel shakes, and I brought this up a little bit on some of the shows earlier this week, JPP, to me, has the flexibility to stand up. Vernon, we've certainly seen stand up. We've seen a lot of defensive linemen on the current team that can move inside and outside based on how Spags utilizes them. I've also pointed out that the linebackers, a number of them are free agents, which means that there's probably going to be some turnover rate at that position, meaning you could bring in guys who potentially have a little bit more flexibility that have played different schemes. Devon Kennard, who's a free agent, he's played on the line in college. He's been more back at the linebacker spot.
A 3-4
Correct.
Defense.
Exactly. And then Keenan Robinson, I understand, another free agent. Keenan was with the Redskins. They ran a 3-4. So my point is, you have players on the roster that have already some versatility. I don't think that would be a huge adjustment.
I just wanted to pick your brain on that.
Fair question. Yeah.
Very good. Because I'm thinking about Tomlinson, like, would he be, like, as an end? And then you have, like, Vernon on the outside, pass rushing outside linebacker, standing up a little bit.
Yeah, I think Vernon could be a guy that stands up on the outside. And once again, I think Vernon also would be a guy that would still play on the line, too. I think that you'd mix and match, just like they do with Chandler Jones, for example, if you look at how the Cardinals perform with him and how they move and mix him and Matt around. And then with respect to Dalvin Tomlinson, you know, Tomlinson's a guy that would probably have somewhat of an adjustment, but let's not forget when he was at Alabama, they ran a 3-4. People forget about that. So if he adjusted from a 3-4 to a 4-3 in year one, who's to say that he can't adjust back to a 3-4 if that's the direction they go in? I don't really think it's a big issue.
I like it. Yep. All right, my cap question was this. All right, now, again, nothing is official. We don't know the real numbers yet. But let's just talk ballpark numbers. We got roughly $25 million, right, in the cap.
There is flexibility, yes.
Right. So, we just throwing them numbers out. I mean, it's around that area, but we don't know for sure what the numbers is. But, okay, so $25 million. Now, with some of these deals that, you know, we can do, like, you know, maybe hopefully restructuring and DRC or, you know, possibly cutting him. I want to keep DRC, but, you know, doing something with his money, doing something with possibly Eli's money, you know, you think we can have roughly around $40 million to play with in free agency? And if we do, you think we can sign a legit offensive lineman in free agency?
Listen, I think anything you just laid out, Shakes, I'm going to let you go because we're up against the end of the program. Appreciate
Without.
The phone call. I think it's feasible, okay? Without even considering the numbers. But once again, it still goes back to Dave Gettleman's philosophy. And I'm not looking for a convenient out to the question, because we talked about this a lot last offseason and about, you know, this guy's on the market, that guy's on the market. And then all of a sudden, you see how the market plays out. And as a general manager, you may create flexibility in the cap, but then you see the numbers, the exorbitant numbers that offensive linemen are getting. You're like, you know what? I need other areas to address. I'm not going to then put all of my money in one boat with one player. And then you start to see what Andrew Whitworth gets and all of these other players. So certainly feasible for them to go out and sign a veteran offensive lineman if that's where they want to go. But I'm keeping the statement on the side. Let's see how the market plays out, because the way we're looking at things right now, who knows? Who knows how much interest Justin Pugh is going to get on the open market if the Giants don't lock him up sooner? It's hard to say. I mean, all it takes is one team, one team that sees value in a player and they could be willing to give him everything, including the kitchen sink, and then your game plan completely changes. So it depends on Dave Gettleman's philosophy moving into free agency. And I also go back to his philosophy when he was with the Panthers. The way he built the offensive line was not so much throwing money at all of the offensive linemen. He did sign Matt Khalil. You can reference that from last year. He brought in Michael Orr. I get that. But at the same time, he also utilized his draft to rebuild that offensive line. And don't overlook that as well. With that being said, that is going to wrap up today's program. I want to thank everybody for weighing in on the phones to keep me company. I want to thank those of you who weighed in on Twitter as well. I will try to address some of your tweets off the air if I did not bring them up on the air. Big Blue Kickoff Live is back up and running tomorrow at noon Eastern. Now, the press conference is 11 a.m. Eastern. It is going to be streamed live on Giants.com, so you have an opportunity to watch the introductory presser for Pat Shurmur as he will officially become the 18th coach in franchise history. Big Blue Kickoff Live continues to be up and running each and every weekday at noon Eastern. We'll continue to chat with you and interact with you with respect to all topics for the New York Giants. Stay locked to Giants.com for all the latest ins and outs, especially some of the latest tidbits from the Senior Bowl. Lance Meadows signing off here on Giants.com. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.